What's up, world? Welcome to another episode of the Black Sheep Perspective. I took a little break because I had a lot of things that I'm working on right now. You guys keep an eye out for the apparel. It's coming out very soon. Plus, I also got a second podcast that's coming out for all you MMA fans. Keep in tune to that. So we took a little break. We're back, though, and we're back with somebody that I've been basically hunting down for, I almost lost track of time. I think it's been maybe 6 months. No, probably more. Oh, my God. It's been damn near a year, I think. Well, guys, welcome Danielle Gonzalez, a.k.a. Danny, better known as Danny. Welcome to the show, Danny.
Thank you for having me.
The reason I tell everybody that it took a while, basically the backdrop on how I got Danny here was we got a mutual friend in Gio, a.k.a. Dissum 305. If you guys haven't followed him yet, an amazing, amazing artist / graffiti artist who's got a lot of big movements. If you guys see Dwayne Wade's painting in Wynwood, if you see the Trick Daddy painting, the Pitbull painting, and now for the newest one, Udonis painting, and he just did a DJ Khaled painting at some famous restaurant. This guy's killing it. If you've seen these paintings, it's him behind it with some other friends. And anyhow, Dissum is who brought us together. Once I did my podcast with Dissum, which, by the way, I'll have him back on very soon, should be in a couple of weeks, I asked him, hey, man, listen, I'm intrigued by people, hence why he was there that day. When somebody's a guest on my podcast, 9 times out of 10, it's because I am literally, genuinely, 100% interested in your story. I am interested in what you do, how you got there, you know, why you made that choice, so on and so forth. It's never about promoting somebody. It's never about grabbing people who have clout. That's just not my thing. If you got clout, you just happen to have it and you end up on the show. But most of the times, I have a genuine interest. So I gave him all the ideas of, you know, people who I was interested in. And sure enough, he comes back and he says, man, I got this girl who's super cool that I did some type of photo shoot with. Tell us about that. How did you get involved with Gio, where you guys did some photo shoot of some sort that involved painting and something else?
Yeah, well, so we've known each other for quite a long time. I think the anniversary was like 10 years ago when we actually did the shoot. So he had this great idea.
That's a long time. Wow, I thought it was a lot less. Okay.
No, it's been like 10 years. And he wanted to have this whole idea of bringing together all different graffiti artists and creating a calendar, something that was fun and different. And he wanted to bring in models and have the artists actually design on each and every single one of the models. So 12 months, 12 models, and got some cool photos. Honestly, some of my best photos I think I've ever had in a photo shoot.
You have done modeling a couple of times before that?
Yes. Here and there, it was just, you know, someone says, hey, I want to pay you to take a picture. I'm like, oh, okay, sure, cool. Let's do this. Right. I don't know. And so, yeah, he had me join on this little adventure, which actually turned out so cool. Once the calendar was actually released, what was cool is that he gave each of the artists back their original picture or the photo that they put into the calendar and then had them design on top of the picture, and he auctioned them off, and he actually, I think he donated some to good causes, and, you know, just to, you know, bring awareness that graffiti isn't bad.
Right.
It's an art. It's a, you know, it's an outlet for a lot of people who probably wouldn't have a way of expressing themselves elsewhere.
And that's awesome that you said that, because that's the main thing that he basically expressed during our podcast, minus a few, you know, stories of, you know, how he got to where he got to and what he did. But yes, he was trying to get his point across that graffiti is not, you know, there's just always people who make things look worse than what it should be. Every race, every gender, every profession, there's always somebody who fucks it up for everybody, you know. And graffiti has gotten a bad name, but on the flip side, it really has made a big change, a big turn. You look at if anybody listening is not from Miami, you know, if and when you get here, go check out Wynwood, the art district, and you'll see just how beautiful the graffiti is and what it does. And yeah, that was definitely his, you know, the point he was trying to get across. And he was also, so he was telling me, you know, I told him I like to see people who have to go through hardships to get somewhere, challenging situations. And when it came across you and he pointed across you, and I realized you were a firefighter. And you know, of course, this is not the 1940s, 50s. We know that women are doing massive amounts of things, and it's awesome to see. I'm always a big promoter of that. I love to see women in power. But when it comes to more physical, you know, demands on the women, now those positions are still, you know, few. And there's you know, special, unique women who take up those positions. And I'm intrigued by that because I know it could be difficult. Before we get into this firefighter bid that you do, what was it that got you into there? Were you born and raised in Miami, or did you come? You born and raised in Miami?
Born and raised in Miami. My parents still live in the house I was born in.
Okay, but you live in Broward right now.
I do.
Fort Lauderdale. For those who don't know what Broward is, it's the county, but mm-hmm. Fort Lauderdale, beautiful city.
Gorgeous, actually. I love it up there. It's just a different pace of life. That's the thing. Miami's always so go 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 go, and I wanted to take a step back from that and kind of experience something different. That's why Broward kind of became it. It not only was I able to kind of get myself more financially stable, I was able to buy a duplex and start making money and paying off my mortgage because of it being a duplex, but then it now has set me up to be a little bit more financially independent and to achieve more goals that I want to get. Like one day I want to have an apartment building. That's one of my goals.
So when you went over there, it was with the intentions of trying to buy property, or you were just kind of like fed up over Miami?
I think it was a little bit of both. I never thought I would ever leave Miami. I was one of those girls, 3 of 5 till I die, you know. But at the same time, I was like, there has to be something more out there, you know. If I keep myself in this little box of, oh, this is Miami, this is the only thing I'm going to know, I'm never going to grow as a person. I'm never going to start achieving more and seeing things from different angles. You know, you grow on the opposite end of being uncomfortable. So the moment you start getting uncomfortable, all of a sudden avenues start opening up because you have to. Now you have to start saying, oh, well, I can't just lean on these people that I've always had there. They're not there right now. They're now or down. You know, I have to be a little bit more, you know, just
held
clever.
Accountable.
Yeah.
Like we said earlier.
It's so something that.
And at what age did you do that at? Right now you said you're 31?
31.
31, okay. So at what age did you make that decision?
So I went up there, I think I was like when I was 21, when I first moved to Hollandale Beach. Which was a shocker. Oh, man, what a different world it was.
Hollandale Beach?
Hollandale Beach, yeah.
Why?
So,
but isn't that only like 10 minutes south of Fort Lauderdale?
It is, but I guess that was my first time moving away from Miami.
Okay.
And I was like right in this little apartment building that was not far from the grocery store. And like everyone, we always go to the grocery store for one thing and then end up with 20 things. So I had walked to the grocery store that time and I come out with a full cart. I'm like, well, I guess I got to carry all these back to the apartment. So as I'm carrying, this little lady stops in her car and she's like, do you need a ride? I'm like, stranger danger. Cause that was,
this doesn't happen in Miami. Yeah.
Oh my God. And I go, she's like, no, I promise. I'm going down the street. I was like, okay, sure. Had this wonderful conversation with this lady who ended up living in my apartment building. And we ended up forging this cool friendship because of it. But that's something in Miami I would have never done.
Right.
You open a door for someone, they don't say thank you. You're like, oh, yeah, okay, go, you know?
It's funny that you chose to use that example because I was going to say, you know, no one opened doors for you. But the better example is what you just said. No, people do open doors, but people don't say thank you when you open doors for them.
It's something so small.
It is.
I really appreciate about my boyfriend, he constantly opens the door for me in the car.
That's
and
nice.
That yes. is something that I make sure every single time to say thank you because it's something that I think is so important, you know, just to be courteous to people because sometimes that actually starts a chain reaction. You know, you're courteous to someone, then they're like, oh, wow, I haven't had that in a while. Let me now do that to someone else. It's that do good, pay it forward kind of mentality.
What is that? Isn't there a saying for I never go through drive-thrus, so obviously this is not the best example, but when somebody pays for whoever's coming up and then they keep doing that for the next person, there's some type of saying there that someone used one time, and I was like, well, what is that? What are you describing? Oh, you never this? And I tell them the same thing. I never go through drive-thrus, so no. And they said, oh, this happens, and apparently it happened for such a long time. Like, it was at least like 40 deep. Everybody kept paying the next person's thing. So to support what you're saying, yes, it's true. You know, people tend to do that. You see a good deed, do a good deed. It's a very good thing that should be cycling around, and we don't see that at all, or at least not enough in Miami. You know, I mean, it's true. I don't know why. I guess we're known for so much glamour and trying to one-up somebody and living outside your means, you know, things of that nature, that people forget, you know, they're the most common thing of just showing manners, being humble, because you're too busy competing. You're too busy, you know, even in the gym. Am I wearing the right skinny jog pants? Like, what the fuck? You know, like, I don't know. I get it. You know, I told you earlier, in the future, I would love to move up there. You know, I don't know if it'll be Fort Lauderdale or what city, but I would love to move to Broward County. I think the same thing, you know, and I love Miami. I do, but I'd rather slow it down a little bit. I'd rather be that type of mix versus the mix that's down here. Mm-hmm. And shit, I'll tell you what, though, Danny, South Florida's getting clustered, period.
It's crazy to see matter where how you much go. It's changed. Because from when I was a little kid, that, you know, Miami stopped basically on 127th Avenue mm-hmm. and Bird Road. There was nothing on that side. And then all of a sudden, houses are getting built. All the the little...
Doral's on a whole nother level right now. Doral's is...
There's a giant garbage like mountain over there.
Yeah, but very close now by.
One of the biggest and most expensive sought-after areas. Go figure.
West Kendall is dripping over the Everglades. It's right there at the edge of the Everglades. That's how far West Kendall is right now. So... yeah, you know, definitely growth in the city. It's not that I'm running away from it. I just don't want to be that clustered up. Don't want to go through all that. So, you know, I agree with you on that. Now, let's get back to this firefighting. So when did this become a thing? Was this something that hit you when you were younger? Is somebody in your family a firefighter? Or
no, it was definitely something that hit me when I was younger. No one in my family has ever been a firefighter or anything. Unfortunately, I had a little brother who passed away. He had an undetectable heart condition that the veins on his heart, instead of being grown out like it should, if it was wrapped around like spider web. So as he grew, the veins didn't grow with his heart and ended up suffocating. Thankfully, it happened when he was sleeping. He was taking a nap at the babysitter's.
How long ago was this?
I was 6 when it happened.
Okay.
So it was still a very impactful moment for a child. And I didn't take it like a typical child. I was like, no, tell me, why is he not coming home? Explain this to me. I need to know. So my mom had me, you know, talking to a therapist to try to deal with all these emotions. And she's like, hey, how about this? Why don't we take her to the hospital that he was transported to? Maybe her seeing how things work there might help her start dealing with it. So they take me over. Immediately, the whole ER staff recognized my mother. They pick her up. How are you doing? Big hug. Who's this? Oh, this is Dominic's big sister. Oh, do you want to go see the ER? And I'm a little kid, like, yeah. So they put a doctor's coat around me, a stethoscope around my neck, and they pranced me around the ER checking out patients like I was a doctor. Well, while we were there, the actual rescue that transported my brother showed up. And I swear these guys picked my mom up 10 feet off the ground. Oh, you know, how are you doing? Is everything okay? You know, do you need anything? Oh, who's this? Dominic's big sister. Oh, do you want to go see the fire truck? Yes. So they take me on over to the fire truck. They put a giant helmet on my head that kept falling. So I had to keep looking at everyone like this. And ended up putting me on the lieutenant's lap in the front of the truck. And
you remember all this thing vividly.
Vividly.
Yeah.
They ended up talking to my mom. And at that point, I didn't realize that because I was like, oh, where's my mom? But they ended up taking me back to the fire station. I got to press all the lights and sirens on the button board. And they took me to the station, showed me everything there. And at that point in time, I was like, I want to be a firefighter. Like that was such a profound moment for me that from then on, this is what I wanted to do. It was either that or, you know, deliver babies and figure out things with babies. But
and it didn't change when you went to, let's say, high school, you know, thinking about what are you going to do when you go to college? Because to be a firefighter, I mean, you could go to college, so it helps you get in faster,
yeah,
right?
So I was definitely one of those people that studied all the time. Both my parents were teachers, so I couldn't really do bad things. Well, I did behind their back. But, you know, I still purposely tried to get as good grades as I could. And I got accepted into the Honors College at Miami-Dade, which I knew I wanted to be a firefighter. But the Honors College only does AAs. Fire Science, Emergency Medical Science, is all ASs. So I was like, you know what, maybe I could figure this out. So I ended up triple majoring. I did pre-med as my degree, and then all my side classes that you needed to take, I did all firefighting and emergency medical sciences. So when I graduated, I not only graduated my AA in pre-med, but then I also got my fire science and emergency medical sciences, which allowed me to do all the
so
firefighting
the
stuff.
Whole time, the goal still was firefighter.
Mm-hmm. And nice. I did pre-med because just in case – down the road, I wanted to do something more medicine because we have the schedule that I can do a lot of stuff.
And how long ago was this when you finally became a firefighter?
So I got certified in 2009, and then I got hired, which it took forever, 5 years later in 2014.
Were you taking the route of EMT
before? I was waiting. I was paramedic. I did everything.
While waiting those five years,
got my drivers, did all these extra certs.
Is that pretty much what all firefighters should or are doing before they become? Because there is waiting lists. I know it's not that easy unless it's like some political connection you might have.
Yes, and I think it's definitely a very important thing to understand the career by getting those extra classes, by doing those extra things. And not only that, but when you do apply, that's an extra box that you can check off and allow for a department to say, oh, wow, well, I'm not going to have to pay for them to go through all these classes. They've already done it. So you're holding a little golden ticket that can put you ahead of other people. The more certifications that you have, the better. And if you're waiting anyways to get hired, why not do it? Grow your mind. Start learning more about the fire service. So when you do enter it and enter into it, you're not like, oh, wow, I didn't expect this. This is a whole different world. Definitely paramedics, EMT paramedics, everybody should do it before, because you get to actually start doing your ride times at fire stations, and you see, oh, this is the life. This
does
is
it,
what
does it Does it change your pay scale at all if you get the degrees that you got before getting into those?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. The moment that I got hired, I got an extra, I think it was $100 a month.
Because of having that.
So as long as
this is good advice for young people who want to be firefighters.
Oh, hands down, hands down. Depending on what department you have, your percentages will be different. But for every certification you have, that's an extra little dollar sign.
Now, I would imagine that the toughest parts in the beginning, before you became a firefighter, is being an EMT or working the ambulance and dealing with scooping up whatever it is you're scooping up. And I say that because I don't even, when you're an ambulance, you just don't know what you're going to run into, right? Is there an ambulance that only deals with like minor shit versus like heavy duty shit?
Here in South Florida, the fire departments, we're both. We're fire and rescue. So we're combined. Before I was a firefighter, I did work a private ambulance, and that, you're just picking up patients from one hospital, taking them to another.
Right, okay,
and, you know, vice versa.
Yeah.
Simpler things. There were times that they had a contract with the fire department, so you were able to pick up patients for them and take them to the hospital. But it wasn't anything different. It was just, you know, pick up a patient, drop them at the hospital. Same thing all over again. Fire department wise, yeah, that's just the, you know, it's never a dull moment.
And so before you got into that, you didn't see a real bad one until you got into actual fire department?
Well, with
like those 5 years, did you have to? Because I knew somebody who wanted to be a firefighter. He gave up on it because he couldn't take the EMT part because he was rolling up on kids who were, mangled or just killed or something bad, and it messed them up.
I don't watch scary movies, so I can relate my life at work to a scary movie. So it that's kind of how I convince myself that it's not that bad, and it does suck because the moment you say, oh, my God, this is the worst thing I've ever seen, the next shift you're going to see something even worse. And we've been on the surf side. And to see parts of bodies getting taken out of this collapse, to see children getting pulled from the pile, to see all that, I would be lying to you if it doesn't make any effect on anyone. Like, it does have an effect on your psyche.
You know, it's okay, and I'm not saying you're trying to, but it's okay, and I know the majority of the world probably doesn't agree, but, you know, we can rewire the way we think and what we feel and what affects us certain ways, all based upon whatever you're going through, however you rewire yourself. If you're in the middle of Afghanistan in a war and you've been there for 8 months, you might have went in just as I just want to make it home, get out of here, do what I got to do. Now you're seeing bodies, now you're being shot at, now you're going through grenades. And now you can just walk through and not even blink because you're rewired. Now you're like, I might die at any minute. You're just different then. So it's okay to say, hey, I've seen so much that it does not have that effect on me like people might think. And if that's what happens with you, then that's what happens with you.
Yeah, you become numb. That's the thing. You become numb. And it's a shame to become that way because on different calls, it comes out. Your sympathy is not always there. And I have to kind of check myself and remind myself, okay, you know what? this is still an emergency to this person.
Right.
You know, just because it's a stub toe at 2 o'clock in the morning, it's still an emergency to that person.
God damn it, abuela.
Oh, no. How about the 21-year-old who had nightmares and couldn't sleep?
Get out of here. You guys get that type of call.
And we have to go. So at 2 o'clock in the morning, we're there. Like, what do you want us to do?
I've seen recently, there's a couple of, like, funny moments type shows that I watch on YouTube. And one of them was this couple. It was pretty viral. This couple that had brownies. They had edibles. And they thought they were dying. They thought they were... He was like, you need to help me. My wife, she thinks she's dying. Well, sir, what's going on? We had some brownies, the special kind. and he just starts going off on how he thinks he's dying. And you can tell that the dispatch is trying her hardest not to laugh. So, yeah, I get what you're saying. But I also just think that it's okay to be numb because you almost have to. Because if you don't and you get too emotionally involved, or you overreact towards a certain situation because the emotions cloud your judgment, now other people might suffer. Now you might die. Your coworkers might get injured, whatever it might be. So I think that when you're numb, you don't, you know, and I'm not trying to speak out my ass. What do I know? But if you're more, I'm a big believer, if control your emotions as often as possible, because emotions cloud judgment. That applies to everything. Whether it's the happiest fucking moment of your life and you're super in love, if you don't control that, you might overlook something that can bite you in the ass. You know, and it can go all the way to the negative side. So if this is your job, I feel like, yeah, turn off these emotions and know to go get the job done no matter what you see in front of you and what you have to do. So, I mean.
Yeah, and it is definitely an important way to control and understand what you're dealing with. But then at the same time, you have to remember to turn that off when you go home.
That's
because
you just nailed it. That's the one. You guys and officers,
we have like the highest divorce rates because unfortunately you become numb at home. And you know, I'm guilty of it. I'm hard to read. I'm don't show emotions all the time, and it's just because I've had to be that way. And it's not because I've wanted to be, but it's because I've had to be that way. And it due to life experiences, due to job experiences, due to everything, you become this hardened shell because you have to. And so it's something that just because you're older, you can learn new things, you can come home and you can start showing emotions, you can start being what you need to be. And it's okay to feel. It's okay to have those feelings.
What's going on, beautiful world? We are officially in season 3, and we could not have gotten here if it wasn't for all you crazy motherfuckers. Thank you so much for all the support, man. I really do appreciate it. Our subscribers are up to almost 1,300. That's huge for me. We haven't even been around that long, and I feel like we're making leaps and bounds. Thank you guys for listening, for tuning in, for showing your support. Stay tuned. There's so much more to come, from merch to crazy other guests that you wouldn't expect would be on here, and just a whole lot more. Appreciate all the support, guys. Enjoy the podcast. So on that note, though, because that's a great point, and it makes me want to ask you this. All right. I don't know which professions, but you know, typically, what do you call the people who hire and fire, that department? Help me out.
HR.
All right. Human resources. Typically, human resources will, if they see there's an issue with an employee, no matter where you're at, they're supposed to take the right approach to suggesting, hey, are you okay? Do you need time off? Do you need to speak to somebody? Might you need help? Bigger corporations might be a little bit more aggressive. I would imagine that with all the stuff that you guys encounter, witness, at some point, there's somebody there. Well, I mean, I got to ask you, do you guys have a personal therapist for firefighters? If not, who's that person who, you know, checks out everybody, you know, checks out the crew? Let me take the people out for a beer. Let me have a talk with Danny because I heard that she went to Surfside today, and I know that she had to, you know, pick up a few bodies. Who does that? Who kind of, you know, evaluates you guys and says or doesn't say? What happens with that? Explain that to me a little bit.
So it's hard. There's kind of like this unwritten rule that firefighters are supposed to be this strong, always there, can deal with anything kind of person. And it's kind of sometimes looked down upon to seek help.
Really?
That makes any sense? Because then you're not as manly or you're not as strong. It's this weird thing because I've seen a lot of guys who should get help don't get help. No, I don't need that. You know, I'm a firefighter. I got this. And it's like, no, bro. You can ask for help. It's
right.
Okay.
Right.
And I will say, yes, our department does have options and avenues for you to take if you're having issues. A critical stress incident team. They also have different people that you can go talk to. Unfortunately, what I find is that they offer that typically right when it's happening. Right there. Boom. But at that moment in time, you can't feel. The moment you start feeling, you're not going to be effective at your job. You kind of got to keep that hardened face and keep going. And once everything slows down, once things start, you know, calming down, and you have a chance to start processing what you've done, because you've been a robot this whole entire time. Oh, got to do what I got to do. Training. That's when you need that help. But unfortunately, what I found is they don't contact you. You have to contact them. And since we're still on that mentality, oh, we don't need help.
Right.
Sometimes doesn't get to you. You'll get a text message. Like I still get text messages. Hey, you know, if you want to come to this critical stress incident, debriefing.
So let me interrupt you on that. What if I compared it to this, right? Okay. I have a very close friend of mine, Damien. He's a veteran of Afghanistan. He got deployed, I think, 2 or 3 times. Two of them, tough fucking situations. Just to leave it at that, lost a lot of men, whatever. He hated for the longest time to see a therapist. And it's the one appointed by the VA. And there's several different ones. And I remember I used to ask him because I was like, dude, you know, he never, and it's not that he was holding back, but he never opened up to me about any stories. But it was more so because I was kind of like, I didn't want to dig in. I wanted to. I was intrigued. I wanted to know, bro, when did shit hit the fan? How did that leave you feeling? Like, but that's a very traumatic situation. How do you, you know, am I being invasive? Am I being too intrusive? You know, I don't know. So when he told me that he wasn't seeing a therapist, I said, why not? I'm curious. And this is when we started breaking barriers. He said, how do you think I feel when the person sitting across from me is much younger than I am? I know for sure they haven't gone overseas. I know for sure they haven't had a bullet zip through their head. They haven't lost somebody or held somebody's dead body in their hands. And it's their soul. You know, started saying shit. And I'm like, oof, say no more. Because I've been through certain things in life that when people are like, oh, well, you should this. Well, why don't you this? And I'm just like, bro, you have no idea what it is to be in these shoes. So what I'm asking you is, can they still, if they were a little bit more aggressive, if somebody was more of, hey, Danny, come see me, come to my office, I want to talk. Would they be able to get it out of you? Or do you think that you guys typically, it's only a very rare person who would probably be, you know, be convincing to letting, you know, yes, I do need to talk to somebody. Most of you guys would probably knuckle up and be like, no,
yeah,
I'm good.
And well, unfortunately, that's one of the reasons why we make jokes all the time in the station, because that's the way we deal with things. And it sometimes is very crude. And if we say it too loud in front of the average Joe Schmo, they're going to be like, oh my God, you guys are horrible. Why did you say that? But it's kind of our way of processing and dealing with the situation.
Right.
I do think like finding a therapist isn't a science. It's a science. It's not something that you just call up, therapist, yeah. Hotline 101.
Right.
You know, how are you doing? And it's going to work. It's not. Because unfortunately, you have to vibe with that person.
Exactly.
You have to feel safe. That's the biggest thing. Feeling safe to say, okay, I can talk to this person and not feel judged or not feel threatened. And shit, I still go to a therapist. And it was so hard to find the one that I'm with now, because you had to go through a couple duds that you're sitting there going, oh my God, I don't want to talk to this person. I'm feeling horrible now.
Right.
It's not helping. And then you find someone that it just clicks, that they're like, oh my God, you know, I don't care what you've gone through. Okay, sure. Throw something else at me. Okay, cool. They just get you, and feel like...
And it's almost like the energy waves also latch on each other. You know, you feel that energy with
them.
And
it's just finding that person, because...
So yes, since you've been doing it, has that helped you?
Oh, hands down. Hands down, because sometimes it also helps just to hear yourself talk, to hear what you're thinking about.
Very well said.
And get it out of your head.
Yeah, exactly.
Once you hear it, it's like, oh, well, okay, maybe it's not that bad. Maybe it's not as bad as I thought it was, or just now that I hear, I can deal with it. Now I can figure out ways. Okay, well, it's okay to feel that way. Now let's just keep moving forward. We can't just dwell on this. We can't just harp on that. But yeah.
Was there ever a time that was, or a moment, a situation that was one of the toughest that would always resonate? Or has it all gradually just became, you know, kind of swept under the rug? They're all the same thing, you know. You remember cases, obviously, but none that really hit you that hard?
No, I can't really say that. Because you're always going to have those calls that will haunt you, that will always be there. But if you harp on them and if you put a lot of thought onto them, that's what eats you alive. And that's why you kind of have to say it out loud, say what you need to talk it out, and understand that, yes, it happened, but I'm not God. I can't save anyone. Like, mm-hmm. I could try. I could do what I'm trained to do. I'm going to do what I can do. But it's not my job to tell you that you're going to live or die. And I think that, even though it's so rough to say that, it kind of helps, because the what if factor, the, oh, what if I would have done this? What if I would have done that? No.
Yeah.
You did what you could
right,
do. That'll
eat
time.
You up. Yeah.
And that's something you have to remember. I did everything I could do at that moment in time to make this a better situation or better outcome, and it didn't happen. But that's okay, because I did everything I could do. And that's one of the most important things to remember.
I would imagine, much like myself, you know, not knowing all the details of what it takes to become a firefighter, I do have an understanding in regards to the physicality behind it. Luckily, because I'm a personal trainer and I've been doing it for so long, I've helped several firefighters get ready. They've told me the type of things they've had to do. I've watched the firefighter games when they go against each other. And I think when you guys go against cops as too, mm-hmm. as well. So I've seen all that, like badasses, a bunch of badasses. These guys are all fit animals who can do, you know, play other sports. And you don't see little girls doing all kind of crazy shit. These are all big ass men or some type of whatever. So I know myself and other people out there had to think, well, what do you do? You know, as 5'2", 100 and what?
No, I'm 150 pounds.
At 5'2"?
No, I'm 5'6".
Oh, okay. That fits better. I thought you were 5'2". I don't know why.
So
I'm tall.
Fun size.
I'm tall. I forget. So you still have to, you know, people are going to think, are you carrying a ladder? Can you hold the hose? Does she do any of that? Or is she only driving? Is she fucking GPSing? What is her position? Do you guys, and I'm curious now, Is even you being fit, you're very fit, and you're definitely taller than your average Miami girl, at least, you know, who's 5'2", you still are behind the ball when it comes to compare it to the men. Do you do everything they do? Are you expected to? Are you expected to in the beginning till you establish yourself as an actual firefighter? But now it's like, all right, what's Danny's best fit? How does that work?
So no matter what, I signed up for this job. I need to do every aspect of this job. It's not me saying, oh, well, because I'm a girl, I can't carry that. Actually, that is the worst thing anyone could do. That's the worst thing a guy could even do coming in. I'm not going to make this a gender thing, but if a guy came in here, oh, sorry, I can't pick that up. It's a little too heavy. We would rag on him until he picked it up, because this is not a you thing. This is an us thing. This is a group thing. I need to know that you have my back and I have your back. So I've purposely, throughout this whole time trying to be a firefighter, I've trained with the max amount of weight I could possibly have. During trainings, I would purposely get the biggest guy to pull him out. Like, I actually have a story with a guy. His name's Tracy. He's 6'6", probably 300 pounds. Normal, just his stature. Big guy. With gear on, you're bringing up to 400 for something. Well, we did a search and rescue drill. That you blind yourselves out and you follow a hose and you just try to hear for the pass device, which is our breathing tank. To
okay.
Dumb it down, breathing tank on our back.
What's it called? I want to hear that.
Well, ours is a Scott pack, but our pass device is
pass device.
Yeah, it's what goes off if a firefighter's down for too long, and it'll start sending out a signal that won't turn off until the batteries turn off or a person finds them. So it's a way to find, like, during 9/11, like, when all these firefighters mm-hmm. were down, you just heard the dee-doo,
okay.
dee-doo,
okay.
dee-doo, dee-doo, like, that sound.
So that's what's going off, and you're trying.
And you're trying to find that
this
person.
Drill.
Yeah,
okay.
So you can't see, you can only hear, and you're following this hose line to get to this person. So, of course, I'm with this guy. I didn't realize who it was at the time. I was like, okay, well, it's a big guy. And of course, they're trying their hardest to make it even harder for
right,
me.
Right, right.
So he's following the opposite way that I push him. So I do what training does. You do, you resort to your training. As long as you have that training and you know your strengths, yeah. My legs are my strongest. If I put him on his back, that tank is going to allow him to spin. So picked his ass up, put him on his back, spun him around, converted his pack, and now started dragging him. Still to this day, I dragged him 100 feet. Damn. This guy was a big guy.
300 pounds.
Yeah. Still to this day, when I see him in the field, he tells everyone, I will go into any fire with this girl. She whipped me around like a rag doll. I've never awesome. Felt so little in my life. And that's what you have to do. You can't have excuses. Oh, I can't do this. No. Yeah, I know my upper body's not going to be as strong as a man. But guess what? My legs are damn right going to be stronger than theirs.
Is there like a little bit of a boot camp prerequisite shit that they put you through? I mean, I know you got to pass certain tests.
Yes, there's a... like a CPAT test to get on the department that you have to do. But there's no real, like, this is what you have to do. But you got to know, being this a firefighter, might, you're going to be pulling
Yeah, this
hose.
Might happen, exactly.
Yeah, you're going to be putting up a ladder. You're going to be using a sledgehammer. So if you go into the gym with that mindset, okay, I'm going to be going upstairs. I'm going to have extra weight on me while I'm going up the stairs. Okay, start holding 45-pound weights and walk up those stairs. 10 minutes, 20 minutes. The more time you're on there, the better your cardio is going to be. And always train for the max, because if you change right. for the max, when you do that little test, it's going to be a breeze. It's not going to be easy, but it's going to be a little easier.
And then once you guys are in there, are you assigned certain positions and it continues rotating? Or are you assigned positions and hey, this is what he and she and D are good at? Leave them there?
No. So it's once you're on the apartment, the first year you get shuffled around. So you can get an idea of the different spots, the different areas of the department, because I work for such a big department. It's kind of like having multiple little departments inside of it. But you'll be on a rescue one day. You'll be on a suppression another day. You'll be on different spots. From there, once you pass that year, you can bid a spot that you're now either there for whenever, until you decide to bid out.
Okay.
Or you could do a secondary or just kind of bounce around still. Every certification you get, as I was saying, gets you into a different spot. So when I first started on the department, I was just a firefighter, paramedic, could ride anywhere. Then I got my drivers. So I was driving a big platform truck. I was driving I had an engine, an aerial, and a platform in my route that I was driving. And then from there, I promoted to a lieutenant. So now I'm in the front seat. Well, the other front seat, but it's definitely a different...
God, I don't just imagine you when you said the driver, you got the driver thing. I just thought I might have to put that on the bucket list if it's possible. How difficult is it to turn?
Well, you just got to remember you're wide.
I know. I know. So I'm good at that because of a truck. I'm good at that because I've been pulling boats to go fishing. But still, that thing is stiff. It doesn't pull like a trailer, you know, so it's a different approach.
Yeah, you just have to watch those back wheels. When you watch those back wheels, that's where you know you're going to turn. And that's something that they teach you when you go through driver training. Back wheels. You gotta watch those back wheels.
Tell me something that you fucked up one time and throughout this whole process, or give me a couple of them. Whether it was driving and, bro, one time this back wheel, I smashed it into the whatever. Well, I don't know. Maybe you were in charge of something. When did you fuck up and you're like, dude, I would never forget that one time. And neither would the guys let me forget. You know, one of those things.
Oh, my God.
Hey, I remember when Danny, you know, one of those moments.
Well, it's funny because I have like a couple of them, because we're always going to have like those silly things.
Okay.
But I think I was like a few months on the job. Two of them that were really funny. Month on the job, I'm checking out the chief's truck. So you do a walk around on the truck, make sure there's nothing in the way and everything's good. So I'm sitting in the driver's seat of his truck and I'm writing down the mileage because you have to input into the system. And then I turn the truck on, put it into drive, and I go start driving, and all of a sudden I feel thunk, thunk. I was like, hold on a second. I just walked around the truck, and I know there was nothing there. Well, some smart one decided to put his bunker gear, because it was shift change, right in front of the truck. Mm. As I was sitting inside the truck, writing down the stuff.
So it wasn't there when you went around.
It was not there, but... He used to say I ran over this guy's helmet and his bunker gear and everything like that. And he's like, oh, man, come on.
Come on,
like,
Rook.
I'm like, who puts their gear right in front of the truck when you see someone sitting in it?
Yeah.
But that one, like, so it's kind of like a joke between him and I, because later on, years later, he actually, while he was driving, ran over my stuff. Not purposely, but it just kind of happened. He's like, you know, karma. And I'm like, oh, come on, dude. But then there was one as a lieutenant, and man, it, and that one threw me off guard. We were, I was on a different truck, and I didn't realize this latch for our bunker gear that you put your bunker gear in kind of like let go. It didn't like latch all the way sometimes, okay. And it had a fail rate to it, unfortunately. Okay. And so it's in our territory. We get a fire. We're first in. I'm like, okay, guys, you know, let's get dressed, blah, blah, yada, yada. So I get my bunker pants on and my jacket on. I close the latch because I leave the tank and the helmet for the last thing to put on because you don't want to be inside the truck with that. And we go, as we start going, we get to the side, and I see my the whole compartment's open, and my helmet's not there. And now I'm going, oh, God, this is a fire. We're first in.
Oh, man.
I just did my arrival. I did my, you know, 360. And luckily it was something small. It wasn't anything. It just happened to be the dryer was starting to smoke a little bit, but we pulled the dryer out and we're fine.
You still went through without the helmet?
Well,
I thought you were going to tell me like it fell out or something.
No, it did. It fell out. It wasn't there. And luckily I was able to cancel the assignment because it was something small and I had my guys pull out the stuff. And the chief walks over and he happens to have my helmet on. Oh. And he's like, hey, Lieutenant Gonzalez, are you missing something? I was like, I was wondering where that was.
Damn.
But yeah. Oh, man.
So once you became lieutenant, does that make you more paper pushing, or are you still heavily active in all the shenanigans?
Yeah, so now my job changes. Don't get me wrong. I love getting dirty. I love getting my hands dirty. I love being in there doing things. And that was the hardest part for me when I became a lieutenant, to say, okay, it's time to step back. And now I have to let my guys do things. Because now it's, hey, if we're in a cardiac arrest, what do we need to get done? Okay, I need you to do this. I need you to do that. Okay, guys. About time to start pushing this drug. It's about time to, even on a fire. Okay, guys, I got my 360. You see it's venting up there. You have to be a little bit more open eyes, seeing the big picture and keeping your guys out of danger. And I think that's one of the reasons why it's so important to be a driver first before you become a lieutenant, because now you're in charge of the truck as a driver. You're seeing the bigger picture. You're starting to forward think. So as you're pumping water for your guys, you're getting water to them. Okay, let me throw up a ladder on the side of the building so just in case they need to do some ventilation. Let me do this. Let me do that. And that carries over to when you become a lieutenant. Yeah, you're not as hands-on, but I'm still going to get dirty. I'm right. Still going to be in there. If we need to pull ceiling, I'm pulling ceiling too. If I need to relieve one of my guys because he's on that nozzle and he's getting fatigued, hey, let's switch it out. Like you unfortunately do have to take a little back step. And it's okay to do that because you need to be able to.
Well, that's part of the whole process. Somebody needs to help govern the next group of people in, mm-hmm. and you know, that whole cycle process. I have a question. Do you think that South Florida firefighters have it a little bit easier? That's not downplaying their job or anything of, you know, requirements and obligations and difficulties, but compared to majority of other, or at least specifically other departments, let's say like California firefighters, they got to deal with a bunch of crazy wildfires on a consistent basis, and they're drier over there, and they have different, you know, settings than we do. New York or any of those big metropolis areas, you know, fire in room 67, way to fuck up, and God damn, we got to go, you know, that's a whole nother thing from a little kitchen fire that can turn, you know, disastrous. And then over here, I don't know. I don't know how intense it is. I don't see fires popping off over here in Miami, but I guess your responsibilities tend to get pushed and pulled in different directions. Compared to other cities, what is it that you guys would go through that's easier or them more difficult than yours?
See, so with our department, as I said, we're, I think, like the number 3 or 4 largest department in the United States. So we cover such a vast territory. It's like having multiple different departments inside of itself. Mm-hmm. So, yes, California deals with wildland fires, but guess what? We do too in the Everglades. That happens. We have seasons, and that is a horrible, tiring job. I respect any person who does that on a day-to-day basis. Like, that's their job, because you don't have a tank that you're breathing air. You're breathing in that smoke all day, every day. You're in hot gear. You're walking. You're digging trenches. You're trying to stop the fires from setting. And unfortunately, sometimes it just keeps going. And you're actually at a disadvantage because it's not like you have a truck, a giant truck with tons of water on it. Sometimes there's no water around you. Mm-hmm. And your truck has only like 100 gallons because it's a smaller tank because you're driving into places that you don't know if this truck's going to make it out. So that's definitely something that like our department, we still understand, but we, yeah, might not do it all the time. It's seasonal for us. Mm-hmm. But then we do still get those high-rise fires because we have high-rise. We have, you know, right. Miami, City of Miami, all those territories, we still got it.
Right.
I think what the difference with our department is you don't always hear about the fires. You don't always hear about the craziness that happens because, you know, the news wants it to be crazy before they put it on there.
Of course.
But we still deal with it every day. There's a shooting every single day. There's, you know, there's something nuts that happens every single day that you don't hear about.
You guys deal with more shootings than anything?
Say that. I think we're pretty well-rounded. We deal with a lot. Yes, our department is very medically driven because that's where the bread and butter is because we have so many people, but we still do get the fires. And the hard part with our department, when you go to New York, when you go to Chicago, you have truck companies, you have engine companies, you have guys who are now designed specifically for that job, kind of like what you're saying. Mm. We don't have that benefit here. We are trained on doing every single job that a firefighter has to do. So when we get to a job, depending on if you're the first truck in, the second truck in, now your job is going to change. You're no longer going to be on the roof. You're no longer going inside. You have to know each aspect of that job, of our job, and be proficient at it. That's the difference. So I think our department is a lot harder because we have to do that. We have to be everything. We have to be able to save your life, give you drugs, you know, do everything we need to do medically. But then we also have to be able to run into a burning building, still go on the roof, still do breaking forcible entry, this, that.
Do you guys typically share a semi-decent relationship with police officers?
Yeah, we do.
A little smirk came out there.
We always mess with them because I've never heard a policeman not say they wish they would have been a firefighter.
Really?
Every single one. You guys chose the right job.
I've never heard that. That's funny.
Every single one because, you know, who wants to be shot at?
I mean, yeah.
I'd rather be liked by the people than hated. And unfortunately, like,
it's such a tough
position right now.
It's tough. I mean, probably the toughest right now.
I don't envy them at all. Because damn them if they do their job, damn them if they don't do their job right now.
A big shout out to police officers, a big shout out to the boys in blue. I mean, obviously to firefighters as well, but, you know, just on that note of what you're saying, it's very true, man. It's such a difficult position. It's a difficult position, period, in the story. Doesn't matter to police anything, to be that law enforcement. Just listen to the words law, and somebody has to enforce it. We are those guys. That's a tough situation to be in, period. But when you get the bad apples that really make it horrible looking on you from the bad beatings, police brutalities, you know, just things that have gone left or you know, just the wrong way, now people are starting to connect you to like, oh, you're just a cop. You just did you not. That's already bad enough, and it just gets worse. And then we have everything that just happened in the last year and a half. It's like, fuck, these dudes are not getting a break. And I hate to be part of, you know, anything that supports being against them. You know, I've had a lot of shitty situations with cops, and I still have no ill will towards them, or do I come off negative towards them. I judge everyone as they come to me.
Mm-hmm. I'm not going to damn the masses for the actions of a few. And unfortunately, that's what the society is kind of doing right now with everything. Because, you know, there are some people that don't like firefighters. There's some people that don't want women as firefighters. There's some, you know, I get that all the time. Oh, you're allowed to be a firefighter?
I'm glad you said that because now I got a great follow-up question.
Yeah.
What's going on, beautiful world? Thank you once again for tuning in. I just wanted to cut in really quick and tell you guys, man, I really appreciate all the love and support. This is season 3. We're several podcasts in. We got so many more coming. There's a lot of things that's coming that's brand new, from the Go Ahead and Ask vlog series to a bunch of merchandise and to even a new podcast series that's coming out in the future. Look out for it in the summer. But for now, guys, We couldn't have even made it this far if it wasn't for all of you guys. Thank you for the love and support. Appreciate it. Let's get back to the podcast. Okay, so Danny, it's definitely difficult to be a firefighter in so many ways. We've definitely talked about all that. And we mentioned, you know, I asked you about therapy. We talked about how you guys can be a little unemotional, stone cold kind of, you know, and then kind of just become numb to things. And you said that it was a problem. It can be a problem, you know, at the house with your friends or with a significant other. And I definitely know that firsthand from close friends who have been married to police officers. Never a firefighter, though, coincidentally. Hence why I was a little surprised when you said that. Makes total sense. I just never thought, damn, that's right. Firefighters bring the bullshit home, too. It's a tough thing. Shit, I got a brother, man. You know, shout out to my brother, but he became a little stone cold, you know, motherfucker, because he's a nurse, and he was a nurse at Ryder ER. Mm-hmm. I mean, this kid saw it all for, like, the first 6 years. And, I mean, I've seen every disgusting picture of a, you name it, defaced, impaled, whatever, mm-hmm. and he became stone cold with it, and he still got some work to do. But anyhow, with that said, I'm curious. You know, I know you got a great boyfriend now, and I'm sure he's understanding of it. You guys are adults about it, but in the past, was that an issue to try to date or you know, without having to go into any details, but even attempt something serious with somebody because you were different, and or did that make you want to date within because you guys might be the same, or is that like, no, not the good thing to do?
So it's one of those things, you know, they kind of tell you don't shit where you eat.
Yeah, so common, yeah.
But unfortunately, it was something that it's the only person that kind of understands you and your career, because mm-hmm. no matter what, just a normal civilian doesn't quite understand the 24 hours that we're going to be away from work, away from you, mm-hmm. and then the 48 hours that we'll be home, or sometimes we even work more than that. So it caused a lot of problems in the household. We're sometimes not there for weddings, graduations, anniversaries, birthdays, holidays, you know, we're not going to be there. If we're in the middle of an argument and I can't answer the phone or I can't talk and you can't vent because I'm on a call saving someone's life, you know, it does start to pose this issue in the relationship. And actually, when I was first on the department, I was engaged. And that didn't last because all of a sudden the insecurities of him started coming out. Oh, but you're going to be around men all the time. Oh, you're sleeping next to men all the time. And I'm sometimes a sarcastic individual, and I say things I shouldn't. And when he brought up that whole, oh, you're going to be sleeping next to men all the time, I'm like, oh, don't worry. It's one giant bed, and since I'm the rookie, I'm going to be in the middle. Never going to be cold. Oh,
God, yeah, that's hilarious.
I'm like, come on now. Like, what do you think it's going to be like?
Oh, yeah, if you're going to say something stupid, I'm going to come back even stupider.
And I will say, unfortunately, I have dealt with shit on the department that I don't think anybody should ever deal with. Okay. Because by being a woman in the department, as much as I wanted to be one of the guys, oh, man, I'm one of the guys, and I was always the tomboy, oh, I got along with it. I can never be one of the guys, and I have to remember that. And, you know, I respect every man because, you know, if they don't shoot their shot, they're never going to get it. You know,
right, okay.
They're going to miss. Okay. So they're going to try, and they're going to do things that they shouldn't do. And unfortunately, my first couple of years on the apartment, I had people walk into my dorm in the middle of the night, and I was like, get the fuck out of here. Like, who do you think you are? Like, what? Where did you get the audacity to think you could cross that line with me? And then I had to start thinking, like, okay, wait, where did I give that green light to this person or that they thought
being,
it was
being
okay?
Being too one of the
too
guys.
Nice. Yeah, yes. So now I've especially now that I'm an officer, I've taken myself out of that situation, and, you know, hey, if the guys are having their talks, you know, I'll just excuse myself and I go somewhere else. And you have to have that separation, unfortunately. Like, as much as I want to say I'm going to be equal, I'm going to be, you know, it's not going to happen. Physically, I'm going to work my ass off to be as equal as I can, but those conversations, those guy talks, you know, you got to have that distance there, just out of respect and out of, you know, to not have problems down the road.
Yeah, well, it's a good way of approaching it. And by all means, I mean, I would hate to say that, I totally agree with you, because I would hate to say that a female can't get down with the fellas and be one of the guys, because for the most part, I think they can, the right ones. But given the circumstances, your profession, guys are guys, you don't have to be there. So even if you can sit there and hang with a conversation that you're like, okay, what's going that route is it now? You know, you don't have to be there. You don't have to hear, you know, whatever it is that you don't need to hear just to prove to yourself that you are one of the guys. And the truth is that, you know, I say it very often. I don't care how much you think you know guys. You don't. You might be the closest thing to it because you've hung out with them in such ways. But 99% of the girl, oh, trust me, I got brothers. Not the same. Oh, no, me and my man, we are super close. I'm always around his fellas. They're never acting the same as they would if you were not there. There's no denying that, period, end of story. That's just that. So I think that's a good move by you and totally understandable.
Yeah, and it definitely makes it, like, relationships a lot harder because when you're around guys all the time and you hear the guy talk, you know, yeah, unfortunately, you see the girlfriends come into the station even though the wife's at home, and then all of a sudden the wife shows up and the girlfriend's running out the back door. And you're
damn.
Like, oh, my God, are all men like this? And, you know, in actuality, they're not. They're
But once again, you got to see shit that a lot of females will never see.
And I am thankful because, yes, dating a firefighter does make it easier because then they understand the job. They understand the career. They understand that there's days that I'm going to want to come home and I don't want to talk to anyone. Mm-hmm. Just leave me alone. Just give me time. And by dating someone who's in the same profession, they understand that because they deal with the same thing. They deal
with
the,
agree with you.
You know, I'll say like, you know, my man, he doesn't see everything that I see because his department is a lot quieter. And I'm thankful for that, actually. Are you calling
his department bougie?
Yes.
Okay.
But, they're not set up to see the craziness that we see. They're not next to major highways to see the families getting killed. They're not, you know, and right. That's a great thing. If you don't have to see that stuff, don't see it. If, you know, for what reason? Why are you going to screw yourself up that much, right. much more, you know?
But regardless, as a firefighter, he understands.
Yeah, but he understands it. You know, you come home from work and you're exhausted because you're there for 24 hours. Yes, you try to sleep, but doesn't mean you're actually going to get it. Mm-hmm. And no matter what, if you're sleeping and you have to wake up multiple times, get out of that REM sleep, get out of that deep sleep, now have to perform, from 0 to 100 miles an hour in literally 60 seconds for a fire. 60 seconds for a medical car, a minute and 30 seconds for a fire, because the 30 extra seconds is so you can get your bunker gear on, by the way.
Those are the count times, by the way.
Yeah, so 60
and 30?
I have to be at the truck for a medical call, and we have to be in, around, and going. And then it's a minute and 30 seconds for a fire. And that's just to give you the time to put that gear on, get in the truck, and go.
By now, have you found the right balance with your sleep patterns when you're not working? Or are you completely fucked off? Like, that, you know, that's something that my brother, when he worked midnight, it was just, he couldn't shake it. It was very difficult for him. He had to do naps because he couldn't go to sleep at night because, you know, he was so used to it. His brain was wired that way. Does that happen with you at home?
Naps are so important. Oh, that I hate that I hated them so much as a kid.
But so you can't sleep a regular, let's say 5-6 hours straight throughout the night. Say 10 to 6.
Up multiple times throughout the night. Like clockwork, 3 o'clock, for some reason, I'm always up, and I'm like, why am I up right now? Go back to bed.
I have to ask. So if you're sleeping with your man, you guys both get up and start.
Yes.
no, we're chilling tonight. Tonight's Saturday. We're not. Oh, okay, that's right.
Yeah, you see us both were like flopping all night. But, you know, it's the job.
Right.
But that's why you try to get the naps in throughout the day, just trying to kind of hold you over. And, you know, the time off is so important. You know, we get what's called a CR day or Kelly day, depending on what department you work for. And it's a extra day off every third week.
Right, I heard about it. I was going to say once a month, yeah.
Yeah, so it's every third week you get it off. It's kind of a way to balance the schedule. Originally, it was designed to let your body from...
Decongest?
From all the chemicals, from all the fires. Like, it allowed you to off-gas and, you know, make yourself healthier. But, that allows you to kind of start somewhat getting yourself back into a normal schedule. But then, of course, by the time those 5 days are over, you're right back into it. So you never quite get it. That's why one reason why I try to take time off so much, just to, you know, I work 4 days in a row so I can get, you know, a week and a half off. And I'll suffer right now for that benefit of having all that time off. But yeah.
So on that note, and that's great. You brought me into three conversations without me having to do my work. You're making my job easy. Thank you. when I first started following you on Instagram, we attempted to do this. We got thrown off many times for many different reasons. But as I was following you, I started realizing, damn, you travel a lot. You travel a lot. And I thought what you just said, I said, man, this girl knows how to do her job the right way. Go hard. She must be working 3 or 4 or 5 days in a row and then taking those time off. That's dope. Tell me about some of this travel stuff. Are you just a ski bunny? You like to ski or be in snow? Or you just really like to travel? That's your thing.
So what sparked the whole travel thing is I had a cancer scare, something that I was like, well, you know what? If this is the way I'm going to go, let me enjoy my life now as it is. Let me have fun. Let me get out, experience the world while I can before, you know, shit goes sour. So that's what kind of started that. The first year of me going, I did India, I did Norway, I did London, I did, I did just everywhere. Anywhere I could go, I would pick up an app and cheapest flights to another country. Okay, booked. And that's how I'd do it. I'd backpack through Europe by myself. I just went. I needed to go. And honestly, I learned so much about myself doing that. And as I said, you learn how to grow because you're uncomfortable, because you don't know anyone around you. You have to become a better person and be more thoughtful and just understanding. And I suggest to everyone, just travel. It's definitely a very important thing to see things from different perspectives and how good we have it here compared to other places. You know, we're spoiled.
There's this fighter who was just quoted. Unfortunately, he lost after this quote, but he had like a viral quote. And it's kind of known, but he basically said, you know, the toughest part is putting yourself in uncomfortable positions. That's the beginning of new growth. Once you become comfortable with being uncomfortable, you're a special beast now. And that's when you really bloom. I believe that 110%. And you got comfortable with being uncomfortable because of the circumstances. By the way, what was the scare about? Well, how did that happen?
So I had a mass on my uterus the size of a golf ball. And so they were saying that I was going to have a full hysterectomy and I was never going to be able to have kids. And that actually jump-started me and saying, well, I'm too young for this. I don't want to hear that. And I went the holistic route. I researched everything underneath the sun. Read God knows how many medical journals about different vitamins, essential oils. And I tried from being vegan to doing essential oils to doing a pill regimen that actually one of our guys had his wife on, but it was 26 pills 6 times a day.
Oh, my God.
Yeah, miserable. Wasn't sustainable. And that's the thing. Like, a lot of these things were unsustainable and each time I was like, well, you know, it is what it is. I kind of would get to that point and I'd stop and sure enough would come back because each time I was able to reverse my prognosis. And the my doctor was like, I don't know how you're doing this. Whatever you're doing, keep doing it. It's working. But then I wasn't happy. It's not sustainable. I can't do this. I can't live like this. I panicked one day because I was on a trip and came back and they lost my luggage, which in my luggage I had all my essential oils and I was freaking out because I was I need to take these.
Right.
And they're like, well, you should have checked. You should have taken that inside the plane. I'm like, I can't. They're too big of bottles. So I ended up finding what I'm on right now, which is working perfectly, which is mushrooms, honestly.
Wow.
Doing the alpha glucans, beta glucans, I3C.
I love that mushrooms is on the come up right now.
So happy
like the world is fine. And I'm going to give a big shout out to Joe Rogan for helping that movement, bringing these people, these specialists on mushrooms. And I've taken several mushroom supplements and I feel the difference. And it's time for me to re-up. But anyhow, that's awesome. So all that's helped. And now you have it completely regressed.
As of right now, I believe so. I actually just missed my doctor's appointment. So I have no idea. But it has been on the up and up, and it's just funny because my doctor was like, I don't know what you're on, but give me a list so I could start suggesting it to my patients. And sure enough, like, it's been helping his patients. It's been helping his people get better and do it the non-traditional way. And it's
shit. You might want to tell the list here so that, or if somebody listening wants to hear about this list, feel free to help Danny. By the way, Danny, just, I know I'm going to say it again at the end of the podcast. What's your handle? It's Life of Danny, but Life.
Underscore. Of Danny.
Of, just of Danny without an underscore between either, no, either of those.
It's, each one has.
Okay, so Danny. Life underscore of underscore Danny, D-A-N-I.
I, uh-huh.
And that's okay. So you guys, you want to ask her for that list. If you just randomly DM her, hey, I need that list.
I got you.
She's got something for you. What were some of your favorite trips when you did all this traveling? Well, what was something that really hit you? Because you did a variety.
Mm-hmm.
To me, India looks fucking scary. Like.
So India was, India's cool. It was definitely different. It's not what you expect when you go in, because you hear, oh yeah, it's disgusting, it's dirty. Yeah, but there's places here.
Right,
downtown Miami, yeah, I could show you that look just the same.
Mm-hmm.
But what's cool is the history that's there. You know, it's a very begging culture, and the moment you give one person something, like one person was begging a dollar or anything, all of a sudden you get trampled by everyone else trying to beg for more. And they, you know, I hate how they use their kids, like, oh, my kid, my kid. Mm-hmm. But what's funny is in India, you're a celebrity there. They want to take pictures of you. It doesn't matter who you are, where you come from. They're like, oh, you're not from here. Let's take a picture. Can I take a picture with you? And it's like, why do you want to take a picture with me? But that's, they love their pictures.
You
they
just
love
run
to
with
have
it. Yeah, yeah, I'm an actress.
they love to have pictures. And it was just the group of us, we laughed because they would stop us because we were, you know, a little lighter than them. And just, oh, can we take a picture? Can we take a picture? Yeah, sure, fine, okay. But I think my favorite, oh, man, this is hard because I loved Thailand.
Oh, I can't wait to go there. That is like number one. That's where I want to go. I mean, I'm a Muay Thai guy, but not only that, that place is beautiful. I mean, I've seen so much videos. Plus, I heard it's dirt cheap.
It is. You have to go for a month, too.
Yeah, I'm not going to go for no week thingy. No.
It's such a long flight to get over that you have to go there for a month. But it's just the beauty, the rawness of everything. They love their culture so much. They're so nice. You know, there is the sad parts about it. It's like everyone has a price, so you can buy anyone, and that, I didn't really like that. And
like on a prostitute type?
Yeah.
Damn.
Man, it's anyone has a price. And they'll
just for whatever
you kind of say it like, oh, you know, if you give me, and you think about it, you get a 30-minute massage there for $5. But sorry, not 30, an hour massage for $5.
Wow.
But that $5 is a full
week,
like,
of food for them.
Yeah.
Mm.
So when you give them a little tip, they are so happy and excited, and thank you so much. Thank you. And it,
once again, a reminder of to be happy with, you know, humble about where we're at and the opportunities we have here in America.
Yeah, it definitely was eye-opening. And
did you get to fuck with any elephants?
Yeah,
or you did?
So I always tell people, don't ride the elephants, because if you ride the elephants, they're actually abused.
It's true.
If you can go to a sanctuary where they actually save those elephants, that's the one you'd go to. And they have different, like, levels of the packages that you can do. One that you just go for a day and you make them like these little medicine balls that you feed them. It's like basically like crunch together all these different leaves because sometimes they get acid reflux. So you make these little balls. But then
it didn't grab your attention to do a Muay Thai lesson while you're
so
there. The motherland of Muay Thai.
We wanted to, but we didn't have enough time because we did so much. We did Chiang Mai. We did Koh Phi Phi. We did Bangkok. We did everything because we went for Songkran, which is their New Year's, which I highly suggest, if you don't mind getting wet, go for Songkran. They take like this prickly pear powder and they'll put it on you, which that's signifying the prior year. Okay. And then you get doused with water by random strangers all the time from, it's like sunrise to sunset. You get doused by this water, and that's the cleansing of the old year to the new year.
Interesting. I've never heard that.
What's funny is you're walking down the street.
Splash!
And whoosh! And you look behind you, it's this little lady with a bucket. And she's just like, hee-hee-hee-hee. She's laughing. Oh, man. And then, of course, as time has gone on, they now have, like, bazooka guns.
Right,
right.
Oh, boy. They're having fun with it now.
Everyone's just getting soaked. And it was so cool because how we planned our trip is each town we went to was the beginning of their Songkran. So it was week after week after week of just water fight. And towards the end of it, I was like, I don't want to get wet anymore.
It's getting out of hand. You guys are exaggerating a little bit.
Yeah, I think Thailand was amazing. I loved Norway, but I love Norway because I love snowboarding. And Norway has some amazing snowboarding.
So you're pretty good at snowboarding, huh? You can cut. Is that what they say? I can cut. Is that what they say? So, no, am I saying it bad? I thought cutting was like, you know, it's.
Yeah. It is. But it's one of the few things in life that I do that the only thing I can think about at that moment is what I'm doing. Mm. That everything else around me gets quiet. So that's something that I love about snowboarding. Because the moment you're on that mountain and you're going, you don't have time to think about anything else. And that stillness, that quietness, I don't get anywhere else.
That's awesome.
Beautiful feeling.
Any ginormous wipeouts that you?
Of course.
But no broken bones, though, right?
Luckily, so far, no. And knock on wood that it never happens. But yeah, I flung myself off the side of a mountain and had to use my board to climb back up.
Yourself through the snow. So you basically don't ski? You just prefer to snowboard?
I've never skied.
Straight to snowboarding.
Now
that's something you never hear about. Mm-hmm. That must have been the little tomboy firefighter coming out of you. Fuck that bullshit. Let's go right to it.
I'd rather be on one thing that moves. It just made more sense to me. And I thought it did look way cooler. The outfits are cooler. You know, for some reason, all the skiers, the girls always have like the fluff.
The fluff?
You know? little fur and... Are you doing anything? Like, are you really doing anything?
Have you done anything rainforest like Costa Rica or maybe, I don't know, Amazonian?
It's on my list. But while in Thailand, they have tons of forests that you can go.
They are rainforesty though, right? Yeah, they are. That is true.
And it's hot. It's so hot. So you get the rainforest feel. Yeah, we just. One day we'd wake up and we'd be like, okay, let's go venture into that area.
Yeah, most people have Costa Rica on their list, you know, as one of those main things. Mm-hmm. And I would definitely recommend you go there. I've been there several times, but I haven't done, like, the dope touristy stuff of the beaches and the fishing. But I was all up in the mountains. I lived there for a year, you know, with my family when I was younger. Awesome. My mom's Costa Rican, so I just love the rainforest and all the wild animals and, you know, the shit you get to see. They just have a lot of mudslides. Have you seen the amount of rain that's fucking bad? Germany and even southern Utah got hit with some crazy flash floods. Mm-hmm. I don't know. It's been a very wet summer that's really, you know, leveling. What were the other countries? China. China got really leveled and...
Thailand had a big rain. Really? Because they had that big mudslide or rock slide that ended up killing like 6 people in a car. It was all over social media.
Yeah, that's a big downfall to some of those countries, man. When that rain comes, flash floods. People don't know what flash floods are. What do you mean a flash flood? Like, yeah, dude, rain starts falling like nothing. Or you don't even have to be getting hit by rain. It's falling miles away from you, building up on some hilltop, mountaintop, and then it just comes down like a wild river and just demolishes everything, depending on the size of it. That's a scary thought. I mean, you've driven... Have you seen a mudslide in person?
Luckily, no.
Not like happen. I mean, like the aftermath, by any chance?
I can't say I have. I've seen the flooding because in India they deal with a lot of flooding.
There was several times that we saw. We had to turn around. We had to do a turnaround after a 2-hour drive because the whole road. You're just talking about like a piece of a mountain, just squish-squash, just. Like, it's the most scariest thing. It's just letting you know that the foundation that you think you're protected by at any given point can just deteriorate and fall on you. And it seems like that's been happening worldwide. That's a scary thing. I'm glad that we don't go through that here. But once again, like we said earlier, when the water rises, South Florida, get ready, man.
I hope everyone has a boat.
Yeah. Or a secondary home. Or I don't know. I don't think it's just going to happen. The thing that's scary about South Florida is there's been a couple of earthquakes that happened several miles away from our peninsula, but close enough where we could be susceptible to a tsunami or a tidal wave. I think that's the scarier part. We're not going to just get surprised by sea levels rising. It's going to happen slowly, and we're going to be like, hey, clock's ticking. Whoever's in South Florida or Florida in general needs to get out of here because the water's rising and there's no stopping it. Let's say some big-ass chunk gets detached from Antarctica, like ginormous chunk. Then you start calculating. So that's when you know you need to go. But when these earthquakes are happening not too far off, because crazy shit is happening within our Earth's core, and we are sea level, and you know that just one big wave, I mean, the Keys is gone. One big wave, the Keys is gone.
Oh, one big hurricane, the Keys are gone.
Yeah, I'm. You know, they've dodged a lot of bullets themselves, being that they're so small, these hurricanes just kind of breeze by them. But, yeah, it'll be a tough place to live in. What's going on, you beautiful people? Just want to cut in real quick to give you guys a big shout out. And when I say you guys, I mean every one of y'all hearing my voice right now. I truly appreciate all the love and support that you guys have given me, the podcast, my teammates involved, and everybody else. Thank you so much. This is season 3, and I swear to God, this is just the beginning, man. We got so much more coming. So thank you once again, and let's get back to the podcast. So, I mean, Danny, definitely one of the great things about you traveling is, you know, like we mentioned, you see what we have at home. You learn to appreciate the United States and the freedom, per se, that we have, and the way we run our country, even if we have fucking issues like everybody does, even if we have to deal with this Joe Biden character, you know, behind our presidency and things of that nature. But it does remind you, man, people need to realize it's much worse in so many other places. It's just so much worse. But then again, look where we're at right now over here. How do you feel about what we got going on? Like, I don't know that we're going to go into another lockdown. I don't even want to think it. I want to think that there's no way we will do that. There's a couple of cities that might implement it if they can get away with it. But there's no way that we would allow ourselves to be locked down again, at least not our state. Huh. Fun time to be Florida. DeSantis, come holler at your boy. Come on the podcast, baby.
I love him so much.
He's the fucking man, dude. He's the man. But seriously, though, how do you feel about what we got going on? You must see things from a different perspective. You must hear things, you know, because you guys deal with law enforcement, because you guys deal with upper echelon of people of, hey, get ready for this, get ready for that. What's going through your mind with all this?
It's hard because I've now realized that people are driven by emotion, and fear is a big emotion. It's something that most people's actions are a result of the fear. And, you know, you had all these, the mass of people running to get the vaccine, thinking, oh man, this vaccine is going to be what we need. Yet it wasn't FDA approved. It still isn't FDA approved. It's, you know, it's just approved for emergency use, which if you look at the history of vaccines, they've stopped trials of vaccines with way less deaths attributed to it.
I saw the statistics.
Oh my gosh, and it's crazy. And now they're saying that if you do have the vaccine, you actually can spread COVID way easier.
Because it's all up in your system.
Mm-hmm. So, and not to mention that you're only protected, not even fully, only I think up to 30% a few months after you get the vaccine. So, you know, conspiracy theorist or not or whatever, you kind of wonder when you, as I gave vaccines to people, and I have this card in my hand that I'm filling out with all the information of this person's this, that, the date of the dose, you know, I couldn't help to think to myself, why was there extra empty boxes for other vaccine doses if it was only supposed to be two? It's like, hold on a second, this makes no sense. Why, if it's only supposed to be two vaccines, shouldn't there be only two boxes for vaccines?
There's already more check boxes, like they know.
More check box for additional doses on there. So it's kind of hard. And, you know, when you have people on record saying, hey, the masks don't work, the virus gets through the fiber of the mask, even the N95s are only good for maybe 10 minutes, 15 minutes, and then they become saturated with your own condensation for your breath. So it deems them useless.
And everybody's reusing them. We all know that.
And you have children who are wearing these masks day in and day out in schools, and they're taking them, doing studies on them, and there's life, like, killing bacteria that will kill children on these masks. It's kind of scary to know that they're wanting to implement the same thing over and over again, thinking that it's going to have a different outcome. I'm that's where I've been confused about, like, and hearing that in New York now, they're saying, you need to have the vaccine
in order to step into a gym,
to go to a restaurant.
Basically, you can walk outside without a vac card, but you're not stepping in anywhere without a vaccination card.
That's coercion. You are now forcing someone, if they want to live their life normally like they would like to have to do something with their body. Like that, the whole point of the United States is to be free, exactly. Not feel like you're having to be forced into doing something. Like you have children that don't need to get vaccines to get into schools. Like they could sign a waiver saying, okay, look, well, if you get sick, it is what it is. So they don't have to go through those vaccines. Do I agree with that? Not 100%, because I do think there's some measles, mumps, all those things that, you know, a vaccine's good for, polio.
Because they've been proven throughout extensive time and testing, yes.
But for this, like, you're having children die of myocarditis. Children. And it makes, like, why would you put yourself to it? And I laugh because a lot of people, a lot of our patients, oh, I didn't think I was going to get COVID. I have the vaccine. And they're getting the worst symptoms with it. And they're spreading it now. You know, I can say I've had COVID now. And maybe it's because my immune system's up. Actually, the research I was telling you with all the vitamins and stuff that the minerals and things that I take, they've done studies with it that actually shorten the duration of
the
COVID.
Impact of COVID.
Yeah. Okay. So maybe it's because of the stuff that I'm taking, but I know other people that have had it and they're like, oh, yep, I just had this and that. I'm not saying that's not real because it is. It is a pandemic. It is something that's out there. But what happened to flu numbers? Why did flu automatically just disappear? Where did flu go? And if the government and everyone is so worried about COVID killing people and this and that, hey, how about diabetic medicine? Why did diabetic medicine go up through the roof?
Yes.
Why did blood pressure medicine go up the roof? Like, I don't understand. If you're so worried about the health and safety of the United States people, why is it that you're forcing a vaccine that hasn't been tested, that is proven to kill people now and cause issues down the road on people, yet you're not focusing on the other issues we have? It's just so strange, the world we've come into, that people are, as I said, acting out of fear that they would run and go and do all these things that has never been done before, mm-hmm. In hope that it would be something better, in hope that it would have been something cool.
You know, if you do, some guy, I was looking at my phone when you were talking because I thought I took a screenshot, but it's a video. I'm not going to play the video now. He did all the math, according to, fuck, whoever it is, don't hold this to me, but I think if it wasn't CDC, it was whoever else, but the people who are in charge of the statistical numbers of deaths, cases, and so on and so forth, he did it for the worldwide. He did it for the United States. Then he did it for who died off of COVID and who got vaccinated. Then he shows you how you numerically put it together to get your averages. This is what you're supposed to do as a statistician or whatever. And again, don't quote me on the exact number. The amount of people that die from COVID in the United States was like 0.00069. It wasn't even 1%. It wasn't even 1/10%. It was more than that. And he says in his video, nowhere else and no other time with no other leaders would we ever treat this as a reason to shut down the world, destroy businesses, raise the rate in suicide, raise the rate in domestic disputes, raise the rate in alcohol abuse, drug addictions, you name it. Everything that you think you're doing to make this go away or be better, unnecessary, unwarranted, and just completely extreme. And that's the scary part. Because then it's like, don't get mad at the conspirators. Don't get mad at the people who are like, bro, there's a deeper underlying reason. Otherwise, this makes no sense. Why the fuck is this happening? This just makes no sense. And it's worrisome.
Yeah, and it's hard because I've seen it firsthand, the falsification of information.
So I'm glad you said that because I was going to ask you. I was like, damn, do I ask her if she's witnessed this?
So I have multiple cases, like, but the one that comes to my mind the most clearest was was a traumatic arrest we had. Unfortunately, this gentleman got into a really, really, really bad accident, and he went to cardiac arrest because of it. We tried to work him, took him to the hospital. We hadn't gotten a pulse back, and we left him there with the trauma team. And I wanted to find out what happened to him later on. So another patient that we finally took to the hospital, I went to the nursing staff and I was like, hey, how are you doing? You know, what was the outcome of that patient? And So the lady's like, well, let me look real quick. She looks up and she goes, oh, he died of COVID. I was like, huh? I was like, wait a second. You're saying this person, I gave the information, this person died of COVID? She's like, yeah, that's what it states here on the outcome. I was like, he came in destroyed from a car accident. What are you talking about, COVID? Oh, wow. Well, when we took his blood, he had COVID. It's like, hold on a second. They're Trump now, yeah, because that was all money for every person exactly. that had COVID and even a COVID death. Yes, it was money. And you know how many false positives from some of these tests? Like, they actually stopped using one of the tests, like one of the PCR tests, because it was proven to have so many false positives and false negatives that it was useless information. But they had been using that to count. And now it's ironic because if you've been vaccinated, they don't use your numbers to say if you had COVID. They're only counting the people who haven't had the vaccine to count for COVID numbers. It's like, wait a second. Most of the patients we're coming across are people who have been vaccinated that are getting COVID. But they're not counting those numbers, which is ironic.
But that is the numbers that you guys are more coming across.
Yeah.
That's insane.
And it's just insane when you're talking to these people and they're so confused because they're like, oh, I don't understand. You know, if I had the vaccine, I shouldn't be getting COVID. It's like, well, that's the problem. They never said that. They were, you know, anticipating. They were trying to figure out maybe it would work and maybe it'll have a good outcome. But in actuality, it hasn't. So how are they going to continue to force something? And yeah, you could say maybe it's political. That's originally how it was driven politically for the, you know, the whole election, because it happened during election.
Right.
There is people on camera stating that because Trump was pushing a vaccine that they would never take in. These are people who are in office right now. And then, oh, go figure that once that same vaccine that he was working so hard to get that Biden got, now they're like, oh, well, if Biden does a vaccine, I'm going to trust it. But it's the same vaccine. It's like, it's a shame to say it that way, but to think that the whole United States was manipulated because of a political gain and a political yep. agenda instead of the actual health and benefit of the people, you know, it's crazy. It's insane.
To me, it seems like this whole candidacy went the way it did because more people were pissed and hated Trump more so than they wanted Biden or believed in his ways. And that, once again, is an emotion. You guys are acting off emotion. I know Trump says some dumb shit. It can ruffle some feathers. And, there might be things about him that can be called out on, that I don't know of, but whatever. I'm not trying to, fucking give the guy a hand job and say he's amazing. But from a presidential standpoint, from where our world was to where it is now and the things that he did to what's being done now, it's on another level. And it's... It's a weird time to be an American and see where we're at and to see how we've been divided big time because of the candidacy, and now we're divided even more because of vaccination or being unvaccinated and the misinformation that's been coming through the media. And now we're just divided. No one knows what to think. And those of us, I put you in that group, who aren't misled by media, who don't pay attention to this shit, who knows you, what happens in the front lines and things of that nature, we tend to look at the others like, dude, I'm not going to bite into your shit because I know a little bit more than you do. My balls hang down deeper. I'm healthier than you are. Therefore, I have less worries. But don't come at me with that bullshit that's just stirring up, unnecessary negativity in the world.
Yeah, and it is quite unfortunate because people look at the news to find information. Which, once upon a time, yes, it did.
Right.
But when you start doing a little bit of research on the news channels, the companies that are behind them, you start realizing who owns them, who pays for them, who's been supporting them, who they support, and you're realizing, oh, wow, okay, the information that they're giving is a little different. That's kind of why when you go to one channel, one news channel, and then you go to another one will be more right, one will be more left. Mm-hmm. It just depends on who's backing them and who's funding them. And that's where all this whole, fear of vaccines comes out, because one pushes it, one doesn't. And they're trying to make the divide, because if the people aren't unified in some sort of way and you have this great divide,
that's when you go in and conquer. Mm-hmm. Remember what I was talking about earlier off camera? All those war tactics that were used. Everybody knows it. How do you defeat a bigger army? How do you defeat, you know, someone who outnumbers you? You divide them. And how do you divide them? From within. How? Mm-hmm. You make them argue. You make them not believe in each other. You make them divide themselves. And then once you got them like that, you pick them apart.
It's been a shame to watch this happen, because I watch it in my own family that it's right, going on yeah. right now. And, you know, to watch them, like, I haven't gotten vaccinated. I'm not going to get vaccinated. It's Same my here. Own personal choice. And, you know, as I said, I've just recently got COVID. It happened. It is what it is. But it wasn't no worse than a flu. It wasn't no worse than, you know, oh, the body aches, the fever, the this, the that. Yeah, it happens. But life moves on. Mm-hmm. It is what it is. You can keep dwelling on yourself. You can seclude yourself. You can now be eating fast food because that's the only thing you have access to that will deliver to your door. And then you feel like shit a little bit longer. But if you eat healthy, do things right, you'll be fine. But to watch, like, my family, like my grandparents, who both had COVID, get the vaccine after it. Like, why would you do that? You have natural immunity.
Oh, man.
Oh, but I wanted to protect everyone around me for.
Damn it, man.
I'm like, guys, what are you doing? And then I watched my parents. I love my parents to death. My parents are the most amazing thing in the world to me. Even my grandparents, the cutest little couple in the whole world. They are adorable. But watch my parents, because the school system, if they wanted to go teach back in schools, they had to get the vaccine. So they're like, well, we don't want to teach from a computer screen anymore. We're tired of this. So they got the vaccine. Then my little sister, if she wanted to go back to college and not be behind a computer screen and go into classes, she had to get the vaccine. So she's like, I don't want to be behind a screen. I need to get the vaccine. I'm here going, this is your body, guys. You're now a guinea pig. You don't know what's going to happen. There's no long-term studies for this. There's nothing out there. And you're seeing people die while being recorded getting the vaccine. Like,
It mind blows me.
Oh, my God.
If you did your research, it's the quickest thing. Typically, a vaccine is worked on, tested for almost more than 5 years. I think the earliest was like 4.5 years before they would allow humans to take it. This thing got put in a fucking microwave and got tossed out within 6 months. You got me fucked up. And that has nothing to do with conspiracy. It's, I'm not going to be your lab rat. I'd rather trust in my healthy body, my immune system, what my body was constructed to do and continues doing mm-hmm. on a daily basis. That's what I'm going to believe in. But if you pump fear into somebody, they do differently. And I have a quick question before we kind of wrap this up. I know that DeSantis is backing us all up where it's not a state mandated thing. Are we at a point where, like, let's say your fire department, they can't force you to get vaccinated, whether they choose to or not? Are they allowed to force it?
So what they're trying to do is that coercion thing again. It's kind of like what the federal government's doing right now. Okay, you have to get vaccinated. And if you don't get vaccinated, okay, fine. Then you have to get tested
every day, every time you come.
Yeah, or something like that. And, you know,
make it miserable for you until you give in.
Which, hey, by all means, if they want to keep nasal raping my nostrils, fine. By all means, I would rather do that than put a toxin in my body that's going
Agreed.
To.
Good call.
I don't care how uncomfortable you make me feel, because guess what? The more uncomfortable you make me feel, the more I'm going to realize that there's something else out there. If it gets to that point that I realize, wow, the department's going to hold me and try to make me a lab rat, maybe it's time to do something else. Maybe it's time to spread my wings and try something else. Maybe this wasn't what I was supposed to do for the rest of my life. Maybe there's another outlet. Maybe, you know,
right.
Who's to say, like, if that ever came to that point.
I got you, but you would have a positive outlook
about
it.
The last thing you ever want to make someone feel is forced into doing something.
100%.
Because the choices that you make at that moment in time probably aren't what you want it to be.
Yeah, they're not authentic.
And that can
be
applied to so many, so many other things, like in anything in life. If you ever force someone into feeling like they have to do something, they didn't want to do it in the first place. And now they're going to feel guilty about it or feel an issue about it, or it's going to be that thing that's always stuck in their head. Mm-hmm. Like, damn, what if I didn't do that? Or what if I, you know, did something else? And I don't think that's right. And unfortunately, that's what the world's coming to right now. Like, the fact that my little sister has asked me, she's like, do you think I should have gone in? I'm like, dude, honestly, I don't think so. But that's neither here or there right now. It happened. It is what it is. You can't change that. All I can say, here, take these vitamins. Maybe we can get the bad stuff out of you.
Right.
But yeah, it's a terrifying world that we live time, in right now.
Time will tell what's going to come from all this. And by that, if there's going to be a lot longer reverse effects from this vaccine, man, I would be so fearful of what can happen. I don't know what, infertility, fucking third eye. I don't know, but we're going to find out in due time. Because it's just like all those damn commercials, Danny, that you see after your 1 week. It's buy this bottle of water. It'll fucking change your life. 3 months later, 6 months, and maybe even a year later, you might have seen this bottle of water on commercials for 2 years. But then 2.5 years later, hey, if you ever drank that water, if you remember that commercial, call our Cohen and Cohen, and we will sue the fuck out of them and get you rich because you're probably dying inside. What? So this has not been tested. We haven't had any kind of anything. I'd rather roll the dice with whatever happens, happens.
The fact that you can no longer sue the vaccine companies. It
tells you enough right there. Exactly.
It's like, wait a second. Why would you feel that you have to put that into effect?
Yeah.
For what reason? Are you anticipating something? And you know what's going to happen. If it does start showing that it's the vaccine and vaccine starting to kill everyone and blah, 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 yada, yada, they're going to start making an excuse for something else. Because originally, the COVID came from a bat in China. Well, right. No, now we don't say that. Oh, it didn't come from there. It just happened to happen in the wild. Like, they're trying to cover up something, and it's always the cover up. And I'm worried that that's what's going to happen when they start finding out that this vaccine wasn't safe for us to take. But that's only due time.
We'll brace ourselves for it. But meantime, Danny, I want to thank you for coming on the podcast. I want everybody out there listening, guys, go give her a follow. She's at life_of_Danny with D-A-N-I. If you do something and you get hurt and you get fucked up and you know they're calling help, you might see her pretty face scooping you up or doing whatever it is you got to do. I don't know. She stays behind on the side of the wheel. I don't know if she gets out the actual truck anymore ever since she became lieutenant. Great job becoming lieutenant, by the way. Good for you. I'm sure you intend to retire with the fire department at some point.
Yeah, yeah. Might as well.
Yeah, this deep in, right?
About to start studying for captains and
nice.
Trying to promote again. That's awesome. Go all the way up.
Great job. You have a great way of living life. Maybe it got intensified because of the scare that you had, but needless to say, put a change in you, right? You've seen all these other cultures, so you know, I think you give a great example of people out there. Go live your life. That doesn't mean YOLO, you fucking dumbasses, whatever that bullshit is. But live your life, you know, when you have the time, go do it. You know, there's somebody in the studio today and you know, he wished he could have his mother to say, you know, how much he wanted to tell her in the past. And he had a great relationship. And that reminds me of always tell people that you love, how much you love them and things of that nature. And, you know, this is a great example of doing that because of what you went through and the way you live your life and your attitude. And I really appreciate it. I'm glad we finally got to do this. Long time coming. Appreciate it so much. Thank you. Guys, show your support to any kind of firefighter, especially the boys in blue as well. And give Danny a follow if you want to continue following her journey and see what she's up to next, where she's going to. Or you can just hit her up for that special formula that she knows, you know, with all these supplements and whatnot. I definitely want to hear what it is. Guys, stay in tune. Thank you for watching another show. We'll be back in another couple of weeks. Don't forget, I'm going to have Gio Dissum 305 back on here so he can tell us about his amazing journey and what has him traveling the world right now. Love, peace. Take care, everybody.